This is the KVNF News for Tuesday, July 23rd, 2013. On I See Change at thealmanac.org last week, Pete Cage reported seeing snow on Mount Baldy near Crested Butte, while Andrea Lakos reported seeing a lot more mosquitoes and insects now that the monsoon rains are here. Humans may hate those bugs, but birds are feasting on them. I spoke with Jason Beeson of the Rocky Mountain Bird Observatory about breeding season along the North Fork of the Gunnison. Just outside of Paonia, we walked from Rain Crow Farm, where Jason works with his wife, Carrie, to the banks of the river.
It's nice to have all the insect eaters flying around catching the bugs. And, you know, like in a month or so, it'll be tons. In the evening, I'll see just hundreds or even 1,000 different kinds of swallows and nighthawks, and I've seen black swifts, you know, flying around with them. Now it's a lot of the breeding species that are raising young and nesting. Like, we've got a kingbird nest in the front of the house, and they fledged at least 2, I think. And I've been seeing a lot of yellow warblers down here carrying food. Like, they'll have a big beak full of little caterpillars or some kind of bug. You see them carrying food, that confirms that they're actually, you know, have nested or they're feeding young. I just saw a robin when I was out pulling weeds. Looked like it was carrying, you know, a beak full of grass and mud to maybe build another nest. They start really early, so they can do 2 nests during the summer, maybe even 3. And they nest right around the house. Some robins are sticking around for the winter. The old-timers say you never saw them in the wintertime. That's one of the species they've shown, like, their wintering ranges keep pushing farther north because of climate change. There's a black-chinned hummingbird over there. They might have a nest over there. You hear that? Dee-dee-dee. It's coming close. Nice. Whoa! Dive bombing us. The broad-tailed hummingbirds nest a little bit higher elevations typically. They can nest around here, too. Late June, early July. There's a couple species of rufous hummingbirds, which are the really aggressive ones. They're, you know, bright red. They'll hang out by the feeders, chase all the other ones away. They breed up in the Pacific Northwest. And then a couple weeks ago, they showed up here. The smallest bird in North America, the calliope hummingbird, also shows up about this time of year, too. They also come from the Northwest. And then I think it's because of the monsoons, I kind of get another flush of another spring where be more bugs all of a sudden, so they'll take advantage of that. So they'll come down here, and then late August, early September, they'll head further south to Mexico. And I see them over the river a lot catching bugs, like little chopsticks, catching them out of the air. And so they do eat a lot of insects.
When we feed them sugar water, good, bad, what?
They do their normal nectaring or bug catching. That's not like they'll survive solely on the sugar water. I know somebody did some research in Louisiana. Now there's a lot of hummingbirds overwintering in Louisiana that, you know, they used to just not be there, and they're just coming to feeders. I'm sure we're doing something to the population.
Rain Crow Farm is named for the yellow-billed cuckoo, called a rain crow in the Appalachians, because it calls out before thunderstorms.
The yellow-billed cuckoos, when we first moved here, there weren't a lot of records, and they're still pretty rare. We've only heard them a couple times this summer here, and they're actually a candidate for listing, you know, like the Gunnison sage grouse. Yellow-billed cuckoos in the west are also possibly going to be listed west of the Continental Divide, because their populations have declined pretty rapidly in the last, you know, 50 years.
Jason Beeson is Special Monitoring Projects Coordinator for the Rocky Mountain Bird Observatory. He specializes in projects with low-density species, monitoring such populations as yellow-billed cuckoos, great blue herons, snowy egrets, and black swifts. For KVNF News and I See Change at thealmanac.org, I'm Marty Derlin. And I See Change is a crowd-sourced reporting project with KVNF that draws on community observations about seasonal shifts in the weather. Have you seen changes this week? Share your observations at thealmanac.org. The Durango Herald reports that two U.S. cabinet secretaries signed a pledge to prevent wildfire debris from making its way into reservoirs in the West. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and Interior Secretary Sally Jewell signed an agreement in Fort Collins on Friday near the Horse Tooth Reservoir. According to the Herald, the two agreed to avoid bureaucratic obstacles and work towards fire prevention and restoration projects. Vilsack said the agreement would help improve water quality, protect habitat, and reduce fire risks. The agreement is similar to one between the Forest Service and Denver Water, reached in 2002 after the Hayman fire led to a $26 million job to unclog pipes in mountain reservoirs. Six pilot projects will begin throughout the western United States to meet the agreement's goals. The Herald reports the secretaries did not announce any sources of new funding for these projects and said since federal resources are limited, they would depend on state and local governments for help. Rains across western Colorado have led to some fire restrictions being lifted. Sheriff Bill Masters of San Miguel County announced all temporary fire restrictions would be lifted in the county beginning this afternoon. Also effective today, the BLM will lift all fire restrictions across eight southern Colorado counties on BLM-managed lands. Counties on the list include Delta, Gunnison, Hinsdale, Montrose, Ouray, San Juan, and San Miguel. Restrictions on public lands in San Miguel, managed by the BLM's Gunnison Field Office, will also be lifted. And tomorrow, Delta County Commissioners will meet at 9 a.m. to consider lifting the fire ban in Delta County. As college tuition rates continue to rise across the nation, one Colorado school is managing to keep costs low. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
State lawmakers recently allowed Colorado Mountain College to offer a limited number of bachelor's degrees, and now the U.S. Department of Education ranks CMC as the third most affordable four-year public school in the country.
You hear so many stories about how expensive college has become, and we thought that this was good news to share.
Spokeswoman Debbie Crawford says CMC was able to weather deep state budget cuts during the recession because most of its funding comes from local property taxes.
We've been doing our best to hold the line and not have our budget grow.
But compared to other two-year institutions in the state, Colorado Mountain College ranks in the middle of affordability. The Department of Education report also notes that the Colorado School of Mines is one of the country's most expensive four-year public schools. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The Political Action Committee Democrats for Education Reform has hired Jennifer Walmer as its new director. According to the Denver Post, Walmer previously worked as chief of staff for Denver Public Schools and for House Speaker Terrence Carroll. Walmer joins the committee on August 12th and will assist in its mission to push conversation about major education reform within the Democratic Party. Walmer also previously worked as chief of staff for Denver Superintendent Tom Boesberg. The Post reports she helped pass a $500 million bond initiative for the school district last year. During her time as chief of staff for House Democrats, she helped push through Senate Bill 191, a piece of education reform centered on tenure for teachers. Colorado Attorney General John Southerns is claiming the federal government had no authority in sequestering millions of dollars from federal mineral leases. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that money was slated to be used by state and local governments to pursue energy development. In a letter to the Americans for Prosperity Foundation, a conservative advocacy group, Southers claimed the sequester is explicitly illegal. Southers said federal officials have no authority over the money under the Federal Leasing Act. The Sentinel reports around $110 million in royalties from energy and mining companies is being withheld from states. Around $8.4 million of that total is being withheld from Colorado. Governors of Utah and Colorado recently wrote a letter to federal officials on behalf of the Western Governors Association, raising similar concerns. In the letter, the governors claimed that reducing federal expenses isn't the same as making cuts to revenues from mineral leases. Scott Tipton has also criticized the sequester, having previously sponsored the State Mineral Review Protection Act, which claims to protect the state's share of mineral royalties. And finally, KVNF sports reporter Tammy Mack has been following the proposed education and sports facility at Paonia Junior Senior High School and attended an open house on Friday for a tour of the site.
Last May, the Paonia High School girls track team won the state 2A title. It was the school's first state track title, but what many didn't see behind the championship was that, despite boasting some of the best male and female athletes in the state, PHS is one of a handful of high schools without its own track. It also lacks football and baseball facilities and other amenities typically found at high schools across the nation. A committee of parents, business owners, and educators, and PHS alumni is hoping to change that. At Friday's open house, the Junior-Senior High School Facilities Committee unveiled the facility's master plan to the roughly 75 people in attendance. If the plan grows to fruition, Paonia will be the last of the four Delta County high schools to get an on-site sports facility. Student council member and athlete Jason Sturgis was one of about a dozen students on hand to guide visitors through the proposed project.
Yeah, bleachers here and probably on that side. Yeah, so that'll be really nice for the guys not having to go all the way to Volunteer Park. They're very diligent for doing that. So that's really exciting. And then this way.
The master plan was funded by grants from the Colorado Lottery and the Bill Koch Family Foundation. School District Superintendent Karen Gibson and Assistant Superintendent Todd Markley took a mini tour to the site of the proposed Flight of the Eagle walkway. The path will wind its way to the football and baseball fields. The committee hopes to line the path with bricks and plaques engraved with the names of project donors.
This committee is the driving force behind financing this project through a GoCo grant. Hopefully we can bring in some DLEDA money.
Gibson said that the district supports the project but has no money to put toward it. Raising money will be key to completion of the project, which will be broken into phases and completed as dollars become available.
Right now we're supporting it through the use of the school district property here on school property. And in the future, we'll support it with upkeep and through maintenance and keeping everything, you know, up to date.
Markley was principal at Cedar Ridge Middle School when the high school opened its athletic facilities more than 10 years ago. He said the facilities did more than give students a secure place to practice.
You got to see the community involved more in the school, as they would use it to walk in the morning for exercise or later in the evening when the activities have ended for the school. So it did bring the community closer to the school.
Design Concepts in Lafayette, Colorado created the master plan. Architect Shannon Weber was on hand to answer questions. Weber said the Paonia site is ideal for this type of project.
This site has property that we normally don't get to work with in terms of design, especially for a school. We've done park projects that have some of these amenities like the river and the vegetation. It's a great site, it has lots of space, so we have a lot of room to do almost everything that was requested. We've been able to fit it all on the site because it's such a nice size and there's so many nice things about the site and the setting of Paonia and the mountain range all the way around it.
Our goal today was just to cast the vision.
Committee member Bev Wilmore was pleased with public turnout, which included a few new donors.
I think sometimes when you see a picture, it looks pretty, but to come up here and see what it actually can be and where the track starts and where the walk of the Flight of the Eagle walkway is going to be is just, it's kind of fun. And then especially, I think, this river part.
A trail system is proposed for the swath of land between school grounds and the river. The town of Paonia owns some of the riverfront land and has partnered with the committee on the project. Trails will be handicap accessible and could connect with the Paonia River Park and future trails projects. Committee Chair Cindy Swartzendruber said the plan is to make the riverfront area accessible to the public while keeping wildlife in mind. Swartzendruber said a science class visited the site last year and a fox came and sat next to a student.
So you don't want to change it too much so that you scare the wildlife off, because that's a nice opportunity. But to investigate the different kinds of trees, the different birds, you know, insects and things, it's a wonderful classroom as well as a beautiful walking trail thing.
The master plan can be viewed at Paonia High School. For KVNF News, I'm Tammy Meck.
And great to hear Tammy back on KVNF. That concludes the KVNF local news today for July 23rd, 2013. For KVNF, I'm Marty Derlin. Thanks for listening.